Hi, this is Tracy Kales-Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico. Today, I'm interviewing John M. Mulhouse, the author of A Loss for Words and Other Stories, Abandoned New Mexico, Ghost Towns, Endangered Architecture, and Hidden History, and the photography book Still Lives New Mexico, Unmarked Graves in the Land of Enchantment with Richard Barron. Good morning, John.
Good morning. It's nice to be here.
I really appreciate reading the three books of yours that I read, A Loss for Words and Other Stories, Abandoned New Mexico, The Ghost Towns, Endangered Architecture, and Hidden History, and Still Lives New Mexico, Unmarked Graves in the Land of Enchantment with Richard Barron.
Oh, thank you very much. Those are three very different creatures.
Very different. Which one do you want to talk about first?
Well, why don't we talk about Abandoned New Mexico?
Yeah.
So that should be out in a couple weeks now, finally, after I've been working on that for probably the better part of 2 years, so it's a big deal to finally have it coming out.
And you took the photographs in here, correct?
I did, yeah. Yeah, using a range of techniques. Most of it's actually 35mm film.
Wow.
There is some digital photography, and then also at least one or two sort of medium format. They call it lomography, which is a type of photography where you really just never know what's going to happen with the film. So there's a few of those.
Well, it's fascinating on so many levels. But before we go further, why don't you kind of give a synopsis of this for our listeners?
Yeah, well, Abandoned New Mexico is sort of an extension of a project I started way back in 2004 called City of Dust. And at that time, I was living in Georgia. I was leaving Georgia, and I had amassed a lot of photos of really old, abandoned buildings that I didn't know much about. And so when I left graduate school as a little decompressioned, I started to research these buildings, and I was totally fascinated by the history of a lot of them. Some of them going back to before the Civil War. There was one that went back to 1799 that recently got torn down. So they were all buildings that were in danger. I was fascinated by them. And then I moved to New Mexico in 2009, and that was like hitting the jackpot in terms of historic buildings. That's where I found like real ghost towns for the first time. And I just couldn't take enough photographs. And then as I began to research, I found all kinds of fascinating things. And when I started, sort of my Bible was Philip Varney's A Practical Guide to the Ghost Towns of New Mexico, New Mexico's Best Ghost Towns.
Yeah, he's mentioned quite a few times. That's great.
Yeah, he put that out in 1980 or 1981, somewhere in there. And it's just a really easy sort of roadmap as you're driving around some of these areas. And so we just pick out Varney's book and pick a part of the state and spend a couple days down there, or up there, as the case may be.
Right. What attracted you to these buildings?
That is a question that I've sort of asked myself, too, because before I went to graduate school, I had no interest in photography. I never owned a camera. I never took pictures of anything until I came across these old buildings. And I think graduate school was a rough road, as it is for most graduate students.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt bedraggled. It was I was turning 30. This was 2003, and I just was not in very good shape, and I think I just, you know, looked at these buildings and they resonated with me. I thought, mm-hmm. Well, here's this old majestic building with all this history, and it's beautiful, but it's pretty ragged.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just something about that combination that sort of really resonated. And then as things improved in my life, I still was obsessed with them. I still am. So I don't know.
Right.
Maybe now it's something fundamental about my nature. But there is a psychology to it. There's no doubt. And people that enjoy ghost towns, I've talked to them about this. Like, what is wrong with us?
Right.
But,
exactly.
Something about just these old empty places where you can sort of feel the history and feel the actions of people that aren't here anymore, and kind
right.
of think about what they were doing and what happened to them.
It's fascinating, and I like the way you capture the stories in the little bit of history you give us about these photographs. It has to be mentioned, the photograph on the front cover of the old truck and cafe sign.
Yeah, and that's ironic because that's in Tucumcari, and there's nothing in the book about Tucumcari itself. There's Montoya, mm-hmm. Newkirk, and Corvo, which are very near Tucumcari, but Tucumcari itself I don't say anything about specifically. But even that truck has a interesting story. It was owned Army veteran, and he lived in that truck.
Wow.
From the time he showed up in Tucumcari until the time he passed away. And that was his home, and everybody spoke very fondly of him. Everybody really said he was a wonderful guy who, just for reasons we can only speculate about, just decided to, you know, live in that vehicle on the side of Route 66. And then when he passed away, it's just stayed there.
There's a whole story there. Wow.
It's a whole story. It's just, yeah, all these things when you, you know, sometimes you can't ever find out what the background is. But the great thing about the internet is that people will see a picture and say, hey, this was my grandfather's, or this was in my family, or this was a truck that he lived in, you know, really fascinating stuff.
So do you get comments like that on your Facebook page, City of Dust?
I do, yeah. And that was one of the things that I tried to incorporate into the book, is mm-hmm. to use some of these comments. Sometimes I was able to kind of attribute them to somebody specific, and sometimes they were just anonymous comments. I would vet them as best I could, but even just people's recollections, like in a place like Clonch, where they talk about, you know, just how much they loved being in Clonch, or
mm-hmm.
the memories are typically very, very warm. Very few times have I ever had anyone say, like, well, this place was no fun. It has happened, but mostly people are very affectionate, and then also sort of melancholy about what's happened to these areas.
There is one place that you said, don't go there.
Right. Which would be Corvo.
Mm-hmm.
And Corvo is a fantastic ghost town. It's right off of I-40. Fantastic in the sense that it's fairly intact.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of the people that are still there do not want visitors.
Oh.
And then some people have had some sort of spooky experiences, being followed by vehicles when they come off the interstate. Everything from sort of concrete things like that, where they're like, well, here's someone coming after us, to things like just feeling uncomfortable or feeling they were somehow in danger, and I've felt that way myself there. So I just recommend that people kind of steer clear of that. There's more to that story. There was some vandalism that went on in the Corvo area involving some sordid stuff, but there was never any resolution to who was doing some of these activities. But I just, yeah, people still will contact me and ask about it. I'll say, well, you know, I don't recommend that anybody go there because I can't do that in good conscience.
And they don't want anybody there. That's interesting.
No. Yeah, there's a couple, at least one person and maybe more than one, who definitely are not real happy about having people come by. And that's, you know, I should mention that when you go to these places, it really isn't, you know, it's not like you're in a tourist destination.
Exactly.
But you really do have to be very, very deferential and very cognizant of the fact that you're now in an area that is somebody's home. They live
right.
in these small communities, and it always helps to know the history before you go in. We've done some research, and that's helped me many times when someone has said, you know, hey, what are you doing?
Right.
You know, I'm photographing, you know, Mr. Johnson's old barn that was built in 1892. And, oh, really? You know that? And then, you know, you can kind of go from there and learn
right.
a lot of interesting things. But you do have to be aware that if people don't want you there, then you really just need to leave.
Yeah, you're right. It's not like going to regular, heavily populated and touristed places.
It is, yeah. And a lot of times, you know, these people that still live in these towns, they, for their own reasons, which I can identify with, just, you know, would prefer to kind of be off on their own. And this is not what they want. So I do feel conflicted a little bit in putting out a book that people can take on the road with them
mm-hmm.
and go out and see these places, which I think is great. It's been really enriching to me. I'd be kind of hypocritical to say, like, hey, don't do as I do.
Right.
But I do want to emphasize, like, really mind your P's and Q's, mm-hmm. and you know, just be appreciative when people are talking to you. And yeah, if someone is not happy with you being there, then just say, well, sorry to have bothered you, and you know, get back in the car and
get
go somewhere
else. Right. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, you kind of really fell in love with Monticello.
Yeah, and that is a good example of a place where it's extremely charming. I just really love that area. The history is fantastic. That's where the Warm Springs mm-hmm. Band of Apache, that was their homeland, and also, you know, sort of the reservation where they were for a while, where Geronimo was. So really intense part of American history happened down there. The valley is beautiful. It just has a really nice feel to it. And the people there are friendly, but not real thrilled to have a lot of, you know, people descending on their village. And some of these places are tucked so far out of the way, and that would be one where I think there's not going to be that many people going through. Like, if you're going out in that direction and you have an interest in this kind of thing, and you're probably going to be respectful, and you're not going to, like, go spray painting stuff.
Right.
But yeah, that's a place where I think I would tread a little softly, because they love that area too, and they don't want people messing it up.
Yeah, that's one thing about that, is that they're nice. You can be nice to people, but you don't want too many people running over the place.
Right. Yeah, especially in rural New Mexico. I mean, that is sort of,
yes.
If you're out there, you know, that's where you want to be. You don't want to be in a place where people are knocking on your door and,
right.
and, you know, handing you leaflets or whatever.
Exactly. I really appreciated your mention of Dr. Navarro Garcia's homestead.
Yes, and I listened to the interview you did with him, and that's fantastic. He's really a treasure.
Oh, he was great.
And yeah, he's fantastic. I've seen the documentary mm-hmm. about him. I've met him briefly. He did a great, the last post that I did on my blog before I started working on the book mm-hmm. was of the Rio Puerco Valley and some of his recollections of stories from the area that he sent to me, which was really fantastic. So he told me that's, I always confuse this. Sometimes I say it's his parents' house, but I believe that is his grandparents' house out in the Rio Puerco Valley, and that his parents' house fell down.
Okay.
I hope I got that right. But yeah, he's really fantastic. And he knows that area better than anyone. And that's one of my favorite parts of New Mexico. The Rio Puerco Valley is just spectacular. And there's kivas out there. There's petroglyphs. Mm. There's some really cool stuff.
Talking right now about abandoned New Mexico, do you want to read something from that book for us right now?
Yeah, I'll take a try.
Okay.
So this is start of a piece called In the Shadow of the Buffalo Hunters from Causey, New Mexico, which is out on the eastern plains on the Llano Estacado. So Causey, New Mexico is located in Roosevelt County at the crossroads of New Mexico 114 and 321, 35 miles southeast of Portales and about a mile from Texas. Despite some previous conjecture that the moniker was intended to flatter a railroad vice president and get a line through Causey, it now seems agreed upon that the town was named for at least two of the Causey brothers, T.L., or George, and John. The brothers were buffalo hunters working in the southeastern part of the state, and George, in particular, established a reputation for being one of the most successful in the history of the American West. Estimates by outside observers put the number of buffalo he killed at around 40,000. One of George's hunting companions, George Jefferson, known as Old Jeff, said Causey killed more buffaloes in one winter than Buffalo Bill Cody killed in his entire lifetime. The problem with shooting that many buffalo is that eventually you run out. So that's something I didn't know when I was in Causey for the first time, that George Causey was a famous buffalo hunter who, by the end of his life, really mourned the loss of the West, that in some way he had sort of helped bring about
right.
with just, you know, the killing of tens of thousands of buffalo.
I was astounded at that number.
It's shocking, yeah.
Yeah.
And that Llano Estacado landscape is really also very evocative and something I knew nothing about until I started kind of roaming around out there just looking for ghost towns.
So you just started wandering, right? Did you have a plan?
Well, once I kind of digested Varney's book, then it became just a matter of starting to figure out where I hadn't been yet.
Right.
Just saying, well, I haven't, this road is new, or that road is new, and I never made it down to the Boot Heel, sadly. I'd still like to cover some of that. But yeah, just in terms of places to go, it was sometimes just set off and start driving.
You don't have to look at it as a travel guide, just something to enjoy the old architecture and some of the history in it.
That's good to hear. And I should mention that it's, even though it says Abandoned New Mexico, it really, the subtitle is a little more accurate. Abandoned New Mexico is the publisher's series, so it kind of had to fit into that series. But there's a lot in there that's not ghost towns and not abandoned, like the St. James Hotel is in there, which is a fantastic original Old West hotel out in Cimarron. And that's far from abandoned, but I wanted to include that as part of the hidden history of that area. Mm-hmm. So it is a little broader than just ghost towns. I'm afraid that some people are going to be like, hey, why'd you put us in a ghost town book?
Right.
Well, it's not just ghost towns. Yeah. The subtitle is more accurate.
Right. I do want to talk about A Loss for Words and Other Stories.
Mm-hmm.
And A Loss for Words is pretty much a novella within a collection of other stories.
Yeah, I'd consider it, I don't know if a desert noir is a little too highfalutin for it, but it is like a novella, right. And oddly enough, I wrote that before I ever lived in New Mexico, and it is set in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, New Mexico is a big part of what I would call the character of the story, and I had not moved there yet. So I always, when I looked back on it, I thought, well, this is interesting that I'm writing about a place I hadn't moved to yet. And
wow.
It would loom very large just a couple of years later.
That's one thing. A Loss for Words and Other Stories does not have the photographs that the other books have. However, the descriptions of the setting, it might as well be photographs.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. At the time, it was a little bit contrary of me because people were telling me then, these were also things that I would post on City of Dust, and people were saying, well, you need to make a book out, a ghost town book or a book of history. And this was 2015. I actually went the other direction and put out a book of everything except for ghost towns.
Oh, funny.
History. So now I'm finally getting the history book.
Great. Yeah, like you said, they are very different. And the stories in A Loss for Words are different from each other.
Yes, and they were written over a period of probably maybe 10 years, and I kind of broke them up into the places I was living at the time. So they're broken up into stories from the Midwest,
right,
stories from broadly the desert, and then when I lived in the South, I lived in Georgia and in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of, that covers a pretty big chunk of time.
You date them, but they're not
chronological. Yeah. No. And I think, I don't know if I had to reassemble that book, if I would put them in the same order today or if I would mix them up a little bit. But, at the time, it just seemed like that was the way to put them in there. But I do sometimes think, maybe I should have moved these around a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's one aspect of an anthology is the ordering of it.
Yeah, it's almost like putting an album together where you don't want songs that are too similar to be next to each other, and you don't want songs that are too different to be next to each other. It's a sequencing.
Right. That's a good comparison.
So, yeah. I don't know if I would do it the same now, but that's the way it is.
And then the book, Still Lives New Mexico, Unmarked
mm-hmm.
Graves in the Land of Enchantment. And you start off with a soliloquy about Richard Barron. Which is quite sad. Mm-hmm.
It is, and the genesis of the book is actually kind of sad. So,
mm-hmm.
So Richard Barron was someone I met through City of Dust, a well-known photographer from Texas, had gallery shows and worked primarily in black and white, and just contacted me and said, I had taken these pictures of unmarked graves throughout New Mexico, and I'm looking for someone to sort of write something to accompany them. And I was reading City of Dust, and I thought I would ask if you were interested. And then he told me that he was taking these photos when he had been diagnosed with liver disease.
Wow.
And he'd been told, you know, you need to have a transplant very soon because you're dying. And so he told me that he went around and he took all these pictures and he kept thinking, why am I doing this? Why am I taking these? I'm obsessed with these. And he said his friends were saying, well, there's no mystery.
Yeah.
You're taking these pictures because, you know, you're facing your mortality. And he said, well, no, that can't be it. And then, thankfully, he got a transplant. And then he could look back on it and say, like, well, yeah, that's what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Was facing my mortality and sort of, you know, in a way that makes you think, like, well, what am I leaving behind? And then we had the opportunity to work on this book. We had it all assembled and began to kind of look for a publisher. And then he became ill and passed away shortly after that.
Mm.
So this book is one that I put together on my own, at least for the time being, just because I wanted to complete our project. I love his photographs.
Yes.
I think they're beautiful and very poignant. And I just wanted to finish it. I just felt like I got to see what this would look like, regardless of who published it. So that's the genesis of Still Lives.
And your writing next to each photograph is kind of an ekphrastic expression. You're not exactly writing about the photograph. The photograph inspires, I guess, right?
Right. And I don't think that Richard told me, like, well, this isn't what I expected. He said, I really like this direction when I first started sending him a few of these vignettes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, I think he expected something that was more just straight historical. Like,
right.
This was taken in Cibola. Here's some mm-hmm. things about Cibola. But when I looked at them, I just began to imagine, how did this unmarked grave end up here? Like,
right.
What would be the story behind someone that ended up with just a stone, like a giant stone
right.
for their marker, or just the remains of a mound of soil or an unmarked concrete slab in the middle of seemingly nowhere? The stories just kind of came to me. I was really grateful for the opportunity because it was one of the more satisfying pieces of writing I've done because it didn't feel like me. Like, I would read them back and think, like, I don't know what this is. Like,
where did this come from?
The writing I'm happiest with feels like I'm not in it, like I've stepped aside.
Well, there's many different voices, many different characters in many different states of life or death.
Yeah, yeah. And that I was cognizant of that, but I didn't sort of force it. I just kind of let things come. And the jumping off point would be the location. So the historical references are all true. In terms
mm-hmm.
of the time frames that are happening or sometimes people in the area or what was going on in a certain village at a particular time, that's all accurate. So that would be the jumping off point for what I would write. Well, if you were living in this area in the 1870s, then what would you be doing? And yeah, it was a really fascinating thing to kind of come out of nowhere. I don't want to call them writing exercises or writing prompts because they
right.
were really more than that. It was really uncanny.
Yeah, there's a lot of depth to that one as well as the others. But like you said, they're all different, each of themselves.
Yeah, there are definitely three very different things. I would like to get Still Lives out to, you know, more people. The other two, Lost for Words and The Man in New Mexico, those, you know, as many people as want to buy them can buy them, you know, hey, great,
right.
buying them. But Still Lives is a tough one for me to make. I made it on Shutterfly,
mm-hmm.
and because of the way Shutterfly charges, I can only print them when they have a sale that's unlimited free pages, and then I can make copies for $25 a pop and sell them for $25, but I can only make so many at a time because of that. So I wish there was a way to get that out more widely. So I'm working on that to see if maybe
good.
Find someone that can get that out. Because it's the black and white photos, which aren't as expensive as color. Maybe there's some way we can, you know, find someone that can do a little vanity press or something like that
right.
to get it out more widely. Because Richard's photos are spectacular. And
they are.
I wish he was here to at least see the book. So
our listeners can find your blog on facebook.com, City of Dust NM, right?
Yeah, I've got three. There's the blog is a little bit dormant while I'm kind of going through all these book preparations. It's been dormant for a couple of years while I was writing the book, and now I'm trying to kind of get it out into the world. So that's the blog is cityofdust.blogspot.com.
Okay.
And that's got everything I've done going back to 2004, the very first stuff I did in Augusta, Georgia, up until the piece I did with Nazario, which I think was maybe early 2018, and then I started working on the book pretty consistently. So that's the blog, and then the Facebook page is more active. That's City of Dust NM, facebook.com, City of Dust NM. And I try to post there more regularly. I've got a lot of material in New Mexico that I haven't used elsewhere. It's not in this book or on the blog. So I put that up on Facebook to kind of keep the wheels turning.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just put up a web store. People can buy the book. It's cityofdust.bigcartel.com, which is going to be the web store. People can buy it from me, and I'll inscribe it if people want. And cityofdust.bigcartel.com. And yeah, so I'll sign them and you know, give them the personal touch. And
great.
They'll also be the abandoned New Mexico, I think, should be out throughout stores in New Mexico, Collected Works in Santa Fe, and then hopefully Bookworks in Albuquerque and COAS down in Cruces. And yeah, hopefully it'll be out there for people.
And if people go to their independent booksellers, they, of course, can ask for it.
They definitely can. Yep. Yep, it's out on Font Hill Media, and Font Hill actually is distributed by Arcadia, which does those Then and Now books
mm-hmm.
that have the green cover. So it's got pretty good distribution, so it should be available to people.
Really enjoyed talking with you and reading your books.
Thank you. I've enjoyed this very much. Thank you for the time. I really appreciate it, and I hope I can get back to New Mexico soon. I'd hope to come back, you know, in the fall and do a little promo and see some folks and you know, see some old places. And of course the pandemic has put a crimp in that, so
yes.
I hope to get back as soon as I can and be there in person and maybe do some events or at least say hello to people.
Well, New Mexico welcomes you back anytime.
Well, thank you. I'd like to come up to Farmington as well. It's been a while since I've been up there, but I know some folks that I should see up there, so
good.
I'll put it on the agenda.
Good deal. That was John M. Mulhouse talking about his publications, A Loss for Words and Other Stories, Abandoned New Mexico, Ghost Towns, Endangered Architecture, and Hidden History, and Still Lives New Mexico, Unmarked Graves in the Land of Enchantment, with Richard Barron. This is Tracy Hales-Vast with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.